Hello, Pittsburgh. I'm Zach Gibson, and this is TribLive's From the Newsroom podcast, bringing you top stories from TribLive.com. Today, Justin Vellucci returns to delve into the profound emotional journey of Rona Kaufman, a Philadelphia native turned Pittsburgher amidst the Israel-Hamas conflict. As a mother with a daughter who served in the Israeli military, Rona faced the heart-wrenching challenge of being physically distant during this crisis. The Israel-Hamas conflict has escalated dramatically since the October 7th attacks, resulting in over 1,400 deaths in Israel and more than 40,000 Palestinians being killed in the conflict. We're going to explore her experiences, insights on parental bonds under stress, and her evolving Jewish identity in the wake of the October 7th attacks. Hi, Justin.
Hi, Zach. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. So introduce us to Rona Kaufman and her daughter as they relate to this story.
In speaking with members of the Jewish community since October 7th, there's been a noticeable uptick in the sort of community members who are becoming vocal about a lot of these issues. And that seems to coincide with an increase locally in anti-Semitism. Rona, I don't even remember how we met, but she was a great example of this sort of person who wasn't hugely political, but really was mobilized by what happened last year.
Okay. So let's talk about maternal instincts and these familial bonds during crisis. Rona had an emotional journey during these attacks, including the challenges of being physically distant from her daughter, Naomi, who was serving in the Israeli military at the time. Can you tell me about what she learned and how she leaned on her maternal instincts during that time?
Sure. Yeah, I think context is a little important. Rona's grandparents, who were Holocaust survivors, emigrated to Israel post-World War II. I don't know the year exactly. And both of Rona's parents grew up in Israel. Rona was there regularly. She jokes that she has no sense of how many times she's visited, and sometimes she would go and stay for long stretches. So the idea of going to Israel and staying for 2 months was not an unusual one for her. That said, Naomi, the oldest child she has, I think is the oldest of three, made Aliyah, which is when a Jewish person returns to the Jewish state as a citizen. And she had to grapple with this sort of, 6,000 mile gap.
As she says in your story, it was clear to me I could not bear to be here while she was there. To highlight your point, Kaufman decided to trek to her daughter's apartment outside Tel Aviv last October, and she stayed for 2 months, delivering a steady supply of fresh Israeli coffee, croissants, and donuts to the kitchen's unit, also bonding with her daughter over brief moments of levity and hand-rolled cigarettes. So what can you tell me about, or what did Rona tell you about her experience over there?
So there was an interesting sort of post 10/7 feel in Israel. The country is very familiar with this sort of turmoil, maybe not on this scale. But when she got there, it was much different than it was here in the States. I spoke with Naomi, who's in Italy now, actually. She was let go briefly to visit family and travel. She, of course, is being called back. But Naomi said she did not want her mother to come. She actually joked around and said she had so many friends in her base in the West Bank that had, brothers, sisters, parents who they were just worrying about constantly post 10/7. And Naomi felt she was very lucky that there was no one she had to worry about. So the second her mother arrived at her, this two-bedroom apartment in Herzliya, it wasn't as warm and fuzzy as I think Naomi thought or Rona thought it was going to be, but yeah, it was interesting. And the motherly instinct, I think Naomi called it the mama bear instinct, sort of kicked in. And just Rona often went to the military bases on the weekends, on Shabbat, and would just spend as much time just trying to talk about anything other than what was going on around them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Rona discusses the bonds between parents and children under stress. What did she tell you about how her trip reshaped her understanding of these bonds?
She was an interesting case. I think that she found out, well, 10/7 occurred. She was out of Pennsylvania. She was visiting her son, who I believe was going into a freshman year of college, perhaps. She was helping him settle into college out of state. And she said she and her son were just pacing constantly, you know, checking the phone constantly. It was really racking her mind. In terms of how it changed, I don't know. I mean, I know that she's not super protective. She's not like obviously her daughter, you know, left Pittsburgh and moved 6,000 miles away into a country that's been, you know, war torn for thousands of years. But I think she's been able to sort of think about the human element of these things a little bit more than just the sort of the political implications. And I think that's because she's got, you know, as they would say, like skin in the game.
Right. Okay. Speaking skin in the game, let's talk about identity and how this factors into their experience. So the October 7th attacks really transformed Rona's sense of Jewish identity and community involvement. She says since her visit, she's kicked her engagement into overdrive. In your story, she says, the work has been absolutely on steroids. Can you tell me about how her life has transformed and what actions she took to become more active?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, Rona was not the type of person who went to weekly religious services or anything like that. She felt she was an engaged member of the Jewish community, but more in a secular sense. I think the phrase she used was post-denominational, which is actually, if you look at the studies, I know Brandeis did one here in Pittsburgh maybe 6-7 years ago. That's a growing number of people in the Jewish community have this sort of secular Jewish identity, where they don't go to synagogue, but they believe in the religion, social values, etc. Social justice is a big part of Judaism, oftentimes for secular Jews. And I think Rona's sort of embrace of that post 10/7 is very much in alignment with her sort of Jewish identity. She was on NBC. I mean, it's really interesting. She just kind of pops up. She's filming these videos now on social media with support from some pro-Israel groups. But she just sort of pops up everywhere. She sent me this clip. She was on NBC News, like the network news, after the vice presidential
debate. Tell me why you're thinking about possibly voting for Donald Trump.
Well, today is not a good day to ask me that, I guess, because today, I mean, I'm really thankful, right? Largest barrage of ballistic missiles ever shot at a country in history. And the U.S. supported Israel and shot down missiles along with Jordan and Israel. And so I'm so incredibly thankful for that.
The other night, and she was on a panel and they said, oh, how do you feel about how it went? And she instantly like launched into her speaking points about Israel. I mean, she's focused. And like I said, she's out there. She's out there very aggressively.
I mean, I think that if either of them would have made very, very clear statements about support for our strongest ally in the Middle East, support for Israel, about ending any kind of appeasement policy toward Iran. Vance said peace through strength. I mean, obviously, it's just like a slogan, but to the extent that like that there is a party that would actually live that slogan, that's something that I find really, really valuable and something that I would be paying attention to.
We also know that Rona is a law professor. How has that profession influenced her approach on these issues, or how has this new development of a post 10/7 world influenced her teaching?
I think that she's very careful about how she talks about influencing the teaching. I'd love to talk more about the academia, but in terms of her research, like she is a self-identified feminist, and she has always researched sort of the intersection of some of those feminist beliefs with American law. So the I don't know if it's alleged, but the alleged sexual violence against Israeli women on 10/7 like really spoke to something in her, not only emotionally but, you know, professionally in terms of what she did. And now sort of her research or her area of study has sort of shifted into issues related to trauma, both one-on-one and intergenerational. How that, you know, unfolds in the classroom, I don't know.
Okay. So speaking of a post 10/7 world, let's talk about right here in Pittsburgh. Is there a rise in anti-Semitic sentiment here in Pittsburgh?
So anti-Semitism was on the rise, or has been on the rise, in Pittsburgh and nationally for nearly a decade. Shortly before, or around, I'm not trying to link it, I don't want to get into politics, but shortly around, before, around the time that Donald Trump became a presidential candidate in the 16 race, the numbers started creeping up. I don't know if that can be, you know, tied to an increase in nationalism or a fear of, you know, the other. I don't know. That's above my pay grade. But the incidents are going up. And I think that the interesting thing is that there have been, I think, 220-something anti-Semitic incidents reported to the Jewish Federation of Greater Pittsburgh this year, which is above the 2023 number at this time of the year, which at that time already was a record high for a single year. So to give some sense, like, anti-Semitism this year is on track to, again, be higher than it's ever been in Pittsburgh. And I think a lot of Jews and a lot of their allies tie these things and tie 10/7 to what happened at that Squirrel Hill Synagogue on October 27, 2018, when a shooter opened fire and killed 11 congregants. I think that it makes the issues very immediate, and it's not some sort of abstract concept like, well, I'm a Democrat and you're a Republican and we disagree over, you know, the size of the federal government. It makes these things very personal. And it seems like, especially post 10/7, every Jewish person you bump into has some sort of connection to Israel, whether it's someone on the ground, whose family, someone in the IDF, or just someone who's experiencing a personal impact.
Okay. Now, moving with that theme of the contrast in sentiment, you and Rona discussed the impact of the conflict on younger generations.
Yeah.
In many ways, there's a generational divide in the perspectives on the Israel-Palestine conflict, particularly among Jewish Americans. There's a Pew Research Center survey that released in April that says that while more than 90% of Jewish American adults said that the way Hamas carried out the 10/7 attacks was unacceptable, there was a distinct split between younger and older Jews in how they view the war. Can you tell me more about what you and Rona discussed on this topic?
Sure. I think that actually it's really well illustrated by the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League. That was sort of some research I was doing that didn't make it into the article for no reason in particular. But the ADL essentially has done these studies on Gen Z and trying to figure out why there's an increased willingness or increased tendency, whatever word you want to use, to not be turned off by the idea of a Hamas resistance fighter versus maybe an older generation's view of a terrorist, you know, a jihadist. The interesting thing that the ADL points out, and it really does talk to this, you know, age divide, is that Gen Z, these kids who are in high school now, were born after the 9/11 attacks. They were not alive in 2001 when there was a very, you know, obviously a national feeling of, you know, us versus them, and the image of a terrorist, you know, that sort of, you know, Osama bin Laden terrorist was sort of gone and in the background by the time this generation was coming up. I think that plays a lot into it. I mean, it's noticeable. You know, I was at two vigils yesterday on October 7th. One was in Oakland for those Palestinians killed in the conflict since October 7th, and one was in Squirrel Hill. I mean, literally like a mile apart from each other. And in Squirrel Hill, like, you know, it would be unfair to say, like, it was noticeable. The audience was older. Yes, there were kids. There were absolutely kids. There were absolutely teens. There were absolutely young adults. I'm not making any, you know, broad sweeping, but you know, when you went to the counter vigil, if you will, in Oakland, it was, you know, college kids. It was young adults. It was very noticeably a different population than came out to Squirrel Hill last night.
Now, with this contrast, it isn't, like you said, all one broad stroke. In fact, in your story, there are two Pittsburgh natives that you include that left the Steel City and joined IDF for a time. Tell me a little bit about Ari Gilboa.
Ari went to Alderdice. He's a graduate of Pittsburgh school system. He did go to community day school, which is a Jewish day school in Squirrel Hill. He went there for, I think, 8 or 9 years. But he did graduate from Alderdice. I mean, he's a Pittsburgh guy in Squirrel Hill. And he also made Aliyah, like Rona's daughter, Naomi. And he fought for, I think 3 or 4 months it was, in Gaza. He became injured. He was nagged by an injury. I mean, he was essentially running around and fighting on a torn ACL. So he was having a lot of pain, and they sort of looked into it. He came back to the States essentially to have surgery and recuperate. It's unclear what he's doing next, but I mean, when you speak with him, you really get a sense for a young person who, buys into those, Zionist ideals like that. And it's interesting too, because, there's been a lot of talk about how do you separate anti-Semitism from anti-Zionism? How can you express a political opinion about, the Israeli government or Bibi Netanyahu or anything versus just, a person who is Jewish, a person who is apolitically Jewish. But a big part of Judaism is this sense of having a homeland. And this has been, part of Judaism for thousands of years. So the sense I get is that, people like Ari, they're younger. Like he wants that sense of inclusivity that we talked about before the show. But he also has this sort of Jewish base in him that speaks to the need for Jews to have a homeland.
So bringing it back a little bit to your coverage last night of the two vigils. From this, I gather that many people are feeling the loss and the urgency and the crises that are going on with all of these different cultures. You and Rona discussed her hopes for peace in the region. Can you tell me about what she envisions as a path forward for Israelis and Palestinians?
Rona expressed something that I think just about every Jewish person I've spoken to since 10/7 has said, which is that they want the Palestinian people to be free, to have self-determination, to have sovereignty, whatever buzzwords politicians are throwing around. Like, the Jews in America, like, do not look over there and say, we must, turn. I heard the one claim was that a Pittsburgher had said, well, we're going to turn Gaza into a parking lot. Like, I have not met that person. Like, they want Palestinians to be free and to govern themselves. They don't want Hamas to run the government. And I think that's an important clarification. Anytime you get into these conversations about a two-state solution, and Rona and I certainly got into them, it gets complicated because Gaza is being run by an organization that is very clearly defined as a terrorist group. And I don't think that anyone who's not on the fringes would argue that, but that's a big part of it. In terms of the peace, I don't know. Like, I know I mentioned to you the study that came out, or the study, I think it was a poll that came out yesterday, right? The Israel Democracy Institute polled Israelis. What do you think? And the overwhelming majority, like I'm saying, like 7 out of 10, said they wanted the conflict to end. Now, obviously, there were people on the right who are maybe more supportive of Netanyahu, who saw a sort of mission to take revenge. I don't know, like really like attack the Palestinian people for embracing Hamas or for putting Hamas in a role of leadership. But most Israelis, Arab Israelis, Jewish Israelis, they supported an end to the war. And the biggest concern that most of them cited was just getting hostages.
Getting the American hostages out. I mean, the reality is, I don't know if Trump would have done a better job, but we have had a Biden administration, and there are American hostages, not just Israeli hostages. There are American hostages that are languishing in Gaza. There are Americans who have been killed in Gaza. And I don't think the administration is doing anywhere near enough.
There was, like, when the majority of Jews were asked in that poll, what do you think the purpose of this conflict is? They just wanted the Israelis home. And like I said, there's always a fringe element that is going to be anti-Arab or anti-Palestinian, or is going to have political differences. But the thing that was interesting about the study is that so many people of so many different backgrounds just want things to end.
Okay. Well, Justin, thank you for coming on today to help tell Rona's story and explain a little bit of this very complicated crisis over in Israel.
Thanks for having me, Zach.
Thanks for joining. If you enjoyed this week's episode, share the podcast to help keep Western PA locally informed with insightful discussion and the latest news from your area. It's an easy way to spread the word, and it helps our podcast reach more people like you. Don't forget to follow us on Spotify and turn on episode notifications so you never miss new content. Once again, I'm Zach Gibson, and this is From the Newsroom.